There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton is fine. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down Podcast is brought to you by Fubo TV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract and no commitment. Try for free today at FuboTV.com. And joining me today, also for free, is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. How you doing, buddy?
I was wondering how you were going to get there. New sponsor. Always feels good to have a new sponsor on the Chase Down Podcast. Shout out to Fubo.
It does feel good. It's always exciting to get a little more support here. We're excited to have them on board. And I'm excited to jump into a mailbag podcast, Carter. I feel like this has been overdue.
In terms of quality to effort that we have to put in, I feel like nothing better than a mailbag, because I sometimes go into them thinking, it's just going to be a thing because we ran out of ideas. And then I was like, damn, that was a good pod. So
it's also great for the off season because, you know, just getting our listeners' perspectives, trying to figure out kind of what's on people's minds, and a lot of interesting questions that kind of make me think and go, okay, you know what, like, I can answer that on this podcast, but we can also probably build that out for other shows as well. So really, really appreciate everybody getting in your questions. But I'm going to start with a plot twist, Carter. We're changing things up once again. I'm going to ask the listeners a question because I had a realization, and I've already shared this with you earlier in this week. But after watching Evan Mobley workout videos, I got myself hyped and I got myself thinking, do the Cleveland Cavaliers have three players that are top 10 at their position with Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen? Now, that I think they're one of the few teams that has a legitimate argument for that. I'm not necessarily saying that makes them a contender or anything like that, because top 10 at five positions is 50 players. That means half of them are all-stars, right? But I think there's a legitimate case that if Evan Mobley kind of takes the step forward that we expect, and even just looking at the rankings of power forwards in the league, I think he can get in that mix. And Darius Garland and Jared Allen were already there. So if our listeners want to respond to either the pod account, if you're watching on YouTube, respond in the comments. Let me know, do you agree that the Cleveland Cavaliers have three top 10 players at their positions? And what other teams in your mind fall into that category?
Permission to make a few suggestions.
Go for a take, Carter.
So I do think the Cavs do have three top 10 players. And at first I thought, okay, that's one of those things that sounds really nice, but is it actually like that cool? Like 10 is actually a big number here.
It is.
We're, you know, like that, it's people who aren't even sniffing third team all NBA. At their mm-hmm. position a lot of the times based on, you know, gluts at other positions. So, you know, but then I started to look at it and I really only found seven teams that even is a debate. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee, which I think is kind of a no-brainer. I think Drew is a top 10, fringe top 10. Yep. I think the three positions kind of shallow, so Chris definitely makes it, and obviously Giannis. Chicago, if not just because the center position's weak.
I don't think so.
Vucevic still is there, but I don't think so.
No.
Brooklyn, if you really believe in Ben Simmons.
He needs to show it.
I think the Suns definitely are. I think CP, Book, and Ayton are all top 10 at their position. I still think the Warriors are.
I don't think Klay's a top 10 shooting guard anymore. Not in today's game.
And really, I'm not sure Dre is either. I feel like they get some bonus points for just winning a title. So I think it's worth saying there. Maybe the Nuggets, if you're a really big Michael Porter Jr. fan and you think he's going to be healthy. But I don't think Jamal Murray's got
to prove it. And the point guard position is absolutely loaded. Like, I don't think he cracks that even as is. And I'm a Jamal Murray guy.
Yeah, I just think there's a case there at least. And then, funny enough, the Minnesota Timberwolves, now that they've traded, because Gobert and Towns are definitely top 10 at their positions. And, you know, Ant probably isn't there yet at the two, but he might well be there next year.
And if we're projecting for Evan Mobley, I think it's only fair to say, yeah, Anthony Edwards can kind of get into that conversation. And he's one of my favorite players in the league. So you're not going to get too much pushback from me on that one.
Yeah, that's the only real, point is like we can't, you know, turn our nose up at Anthony Edwards if we're doing it for Evan, though. Yep. I do think Evan's a better prospect. I think that actually is a kind of a controversial take.
I don't think so. I love Edwards right now. I think people love Evan Mobley. I'm going to fight you on this, Carter.
We don't need to fight. I don't care that much about it. For a thing that I thought was kind of a no-brainer, obvious thing, it actually is really valuable. Now, obviously, it still matters more to have two top five guys, you know, at their position.
If you want to contend, you need to have a top 10 overall player and maybe two top 15.
And I don't think the Cavs have a top 10 overall player right now, or maybe not even the next year or two.
Yeah, which is why I don't have them in the contending tier going into this year. But I do think it's exciting if I'm correct and they do have three top 10 players at their position. All of those guys are under 25 years old as well, which is just so damn exciting. And, you know, it's just one of those kind of realizations where you're separated from the season. You're trying to remember, okay, like how much of the good that we felt is sustainable? How much can we count on this team taking another step moving forward? And when you have three players of that caliber all under 25 years old, I think we're not getting excited enough about this team sometimes. I think that we can fall victim to that a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to it. I mean, I think that this is a really, really... last year was a really unusual occurrence. Mm-hmm. And unusual occurrences can... You know, I think part of me is just angsty about, you know, maybe some minor steps back and along the way. But like...
You bring the angst. No one would ever deny that.
I'll always do. But, you know, I do think that, like, I do believe in those three guys at the top pretty steadfastly. So the chance of one of them becoming one of those top 10 players, especially Darius or Evan, you know, being as young as they are, it's definitely a good place to be. And I thought it was an interesting, you know, at first glance, I kind of rolled my eyes at that take and like, oh, okay, well, probably a lot of
classic
teams.
Justin. Here he comes. Classic with Justin propaganda.
Getting excited, finding some interesting kind of moving the sliders and the
benchmarks into the Thad Young zone kind of thing. No, I think it's a legitimate point. I'm going to stand by that.
So it is a legitimate point, I think, and legitimately exciting. And I take no pleasure in saying this. Good work.
Yes. You know what? For end of July, getting you to agree with kind of one of my outlandish propaganda type takes. I'm very excited for this. But we should dive into our listener questions. We should stop being so self-involved. And let's start with a challenge that was thrown our way. Evan Mobley is my father asks. And just doing the math there, I think this might be a four-year-old. But how much do you think the current Sexton contract situation is directly tied to the Cavs wanting to maintain flexibility to sign LeBron next summer? If you ignore this question, just know it makes you a baby.
Oh, we're men. We're in our early 30s, man.
Yeah.
Come at us, Evan Mobley is my father. We're not ducking the hard questions.
So I will answer this first. I think there is obviously a desire to maintain flexibility because going into next offseason, this is really going to be the last chance probably to have actual cap space to supplement this core, to add pieces around that. I don't think it's specifically tied to LeBron. And the reason for that is LeBron, he's been pretty vocal about never wanting to take a pay cut. And I just think to realistically clear the amount of money necessary to have the cap space to make a run at someone like LeBron, there's just not a lot of logical ways to go about it. And if for whatever reason he expressed an interest of returning, I think that would come in the form of a sign and trade. But you look at some of the other wings that are projected to hit free agency: Andrew Wiggins, Harrison Barnes, Jeremy Grant, Gary Trent Jr., Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, Kelly Oubre, Josh Richardson. You can make an RFA offer at DeAndre Hunter, PJ Washington, and of course LeBron, right? You want to have some flexibility there. If it's not to sign someone in free agency, it might be to help facilitate a deal where, hey, we get a good young prospect and we're taking on some money. Maintaining flexibility, I think, is the priority. And I think people make just a little bit too much about the LeBron thing. And I understand why you do. I just think it would come in the form of a sign and trade. I'm skeptical of it. I know Brian Windhorst, Zach Lowe, they've talked about the possibility while also saying that they feel LeBron's going to stay in LA. And obviously, August 4th is going to be an important day for all those conversations because he's going to be eligible to sign an extension with the Lakers. From my own sanity standpoint, I would love to see that happen. But I think if LeBron did sign an extension with the Lakers, I don't think it changes the Sexton negotiation. That is my blind guess. Again, we are not a sources podcast, but that is my best guess on the situation.
Yeah, I don't think it's, you know, I think the noise is going to get louder, but I do think primarily this is a byproduct of them, reportedly trying to duck the tax. I think the big ace in the hole, if you're believing in a grand conspiracy right now, which, by the way, I'm more bullish on the possibility of LeBron returning than others. But I think than Justin. But, you know, if you're looking for a grand conspiracy, I think the thing that really kind of blows it up is the Rubio deal. You wouldn't be signing a guy like Rubio to a multi-year deal, which is, you know, what was reported to be the deal, if you are saving every last penny for next summer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that kind of proves that it's not necessarily connected. Now, do I think they want to retain, you know, flexibility for a lot of reasons? Yes. Do I think it's part of a grand conspiracy? Probably not. I mean, no. And frankly, like, there's a reporting from Chris Fedor that they have offered multi-year deals that are, you know, that are in the, you know, the eight figures.
Yep.
So, like, you just wouldn't do that if you were sure that you had an ace in the hole next summer that you had to say, you know, you had to keep the space open for. So, yeah, I just don't think so. And I think, and you know what? Evan Mobley is my father. We have proven today that we are not babies.
We are not. And I thought the Fedor report was interesting. He had a follow-up on a subtext, which I recommend everybody do subscribe to that. Support Fedor. He does great work. Friend of the podcast. We always support friends of the podcast over here. But he mentioned that the standing offer is the amount of room that exists below the luxury tax right now. And it will be interesting because we know that in order to clear a roster spot to add Sexton, that might change what that amount is under the luxury tax. Does that mean the offer is going to go up? We have no idea. Is that offer even what's on the table? We have no idea, right? Like, again, we don't do the reporting on this, but I think there's so many different variables, and the desire to not start the repeater clock makes a lot of sense. The desire to want to have some flexibility. Like, think of last year where we talked about, like, Doug McDermott as a free agent option, and he went for more than the mid-level exception. Having cap space beyond just the mid-level exception can help you make those little moves in the margins that make a big difference when you're trying to take that next step. And especially when you look at just how, like, if we are projecting internal growth for this team, you're talking Garland, Rubio, Okoro, possibly Sexton back, Agbaji, Lowry, Mobley, Allen, Isaiah Mobley. Like, there's a lot of roster spots that are already spoken, and it might not be a major shakeup, but just having that kind of flexibility, I think, makes a big, big difference. So I hope we answered that question thoroughly, and I also appreciate that not everyone bombarded us with Sexton questions because they know that we're not here doing reporting. But speaking of friends of the podcast, Carter, Corey Walsh asks, heading into next offseason, if we do have Sexton, how do you think the Sexton, LeVert, Agbaji, and Okoro situation will play out? I'll let you go first.
You know, it's really very interesting. I do still think that they have to choose between Sexton and LeVert, probably. I think those two are like kind of like, I just don't see a world in which 3 years from now, Sexton, LeVert, Ochai, and Okoro are all on the team.
Yeah.
And I would argue that Sexton and LeVert are the least role malleable and the hardest to not play. Mm-hmm. Like, both those guys are going to expect, based on their skill sets, to be getting burned, to be getting shots. And the team is, you know, so I think that that is a long-term kind of thing that has to be solved. And part of the, you know, there is some appeal to me in Colin being back on a short-term deal next year, so it can just kind of play itself out.
Yeah.
So like, we can kind of figure out who kind of earns the time in the pecking order. But I think Ochai is just, I think he's going to stick, mm-hmm. For the long-term because of his role malleability. He can play with any of those three guys you just mentioned. With relative ease. And then Okoro, I think this is the prove it year for him. You know, this is the year where I don't see any world which the Cavs don't pick up his option, just because you just typically have to really be out on a guy to not do that.
Okoro's? Yeah.
No. Yeah.
I'm pretty confident.
Just to be clear, this is a year where they you know, where it's going to be, you know, like, this is a big prove it year. Mm-hmm. This is year three. And the team got good faster than expected. And like, you know, I think they're going to learn a lot about, you know, their level of investment in him and what they can afford to be invested in him moving forward. You know, mm-hmm. It's easy to be invested in projects when you're OKC, because you can say, take all the time you need, buddy. We're not even trying to be good right now. Okoro, they might have to move up the timeline on him, or mm-hmm. they have moved up the timeline on him for, you know, better or worse, based on the players that are around him. So I think Ochai is probably the only, I mean, as far as I can tell, which is funny to say about a rookie who hasn't really played yet, he's the only like sure thing to me that's like there two, 3 years from now. I think everything else is so malleable, and it's going to be determined by contract requirements off the court, mm-hmm. and play on the court.
Yeah. And I took a stab at kind of figuring out if minutes are going to be available. And just for simplicity's sake, I put Garland, Mobley, and Allen at 32 minutes a night. At 26 minutes a night, I have Sexton, LeVert, and Lowry. This is, of course, assuming that Sexton's healthy and back to being himself. In the 18-minute camp, you can get 18 minutes for Love, Okoro, as well as Agbaji. And that leaves 12 leftover minutes for a 10th man in the rotation. So I think, like, obviously there's going to be fluctuations based on who's playing well on a given night or whatnot. But I think that's a way that you can see that all of these guys can get minutes. Hey, maybe you want Jared to only play 30 minutes a night just to keep him a little bit fresh, or you want to manage those minutes. All of a sudden that creates a few more for everybody else. But this, like, that kind of an outline gives real opportunity for all of those guys. And if you're only going 9 deep on any given night, that's 12 minutes that you can distribute throughout the roster, right? So I think Agbaji, if I had to guess, I think he's going to play primarily as a backup 3, just because you need to kind of create and like, you need to have those guard minutes available. And there's some players on the roster that can strictly only really play at the guard positions. So I think he's going to play more at that position on the wing, maybe with Okoro, or Okoro kind of share some of those minutes at the backup 3. But I definitely think that there are opportunities available for all of these guys to kind of get significant minutes on the court.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be an interesting balance. You know, it's going to be this weird mix of role and fit, who the team thinks is worth, you know, really spending on. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, literally just who's good enough.
Who like, earns the opportunity, right? Who, like, it's going to be real competition here.
I keep saying they need to find 16-game players, you know, not 82-game players. Now that they know they've got their core three, I think, you know, ultimately, that's what this season is about. I've said that multiple times, and I think it definitely applies to this group of four. Mm-hmm. Who are they ready to go into the foxhole with in a playoff series?
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree. And this kind of ties into a question B. Mark had asked, which is, do you guys think that either Stevens or Wade will have an increased role this upcoming season? I mean, I didn't list either of those guys in kind of my breakdown. And obviously I'm prioritizing guys that they've drafted and whatnot. Reality is, throughout the course of the season, you're going to have injuries. I think both of those guys will have opportunities to earn minutes as well, just like everybody else on the roster. But to start things out and kind of looking at how things started at the beginning of last year, those guys weren't really in the rotation a whole bunch to start the season. I mean, Lamar ended up starting 13 games for the Cavs. Dean Wade started, it was a career-high 28 games for the Cavs last season. So I don't think it's going to be an increase from that. And some of that's me obviously hoping that they'll be a little bit healthier this season. But we've talked about it before. If Lamar Stevens can add an outside jumper, there's a role for him to maybe have like a PJ Tucker type impact on the team where, you know, he's a little bit shorter, but he's such a strong player, can defend front court guys, can pop that corner three. If he can do that, and there was videos this week of him working on that corner shot, I can see him earning opportunity. But if I'm penciling things in right now at the end of July, I wouldn't say increased role for those guys.
I think the expectation should be a decreased role.
Yeah.
Just as a byproduct of the team is likely to, if they have average injury luck, be a little bit healthier. Mm-hmm. I do think JB has demonstrated that he would rather swap out a starter with a guy out of the rotation than mess up his rotation.
Yeah.
He's not like us playing 2K where if your starting shooting guard goes down, you just put your sixth man in and then slide everyone up a roll. Like, JB hasn't shown much predisposition to do that historically. He clearly likes to
maintain those rotations.
So yeah, like when Okoro went down, he just started Lamar instead of moving like someone like Jetty in. So like I think he's probably, that's going to be where those guys get minutes. If Lowry gets hurt, if Colin or Karras or whoever is starting at the
Kevin
two gets hurt
time, like I know he had a lot of injury luck last year, but I think that that's the exact type of opportunity where you would see a Lamar or Dean Wade step into the lineup. And the nice thing about it is, you know, that they've historically shown that they can step in and actually give you good minutes and you can continue to win. So
if you're 11th and 12th men, which I think I would probably designate them as that, maybe they're 12th and 13th, depending on where Robin Lopez slots in.
Yeah.
If they can play for you without ruining you, you have really good 11th, 12th, 13th men. And I think that the Cavs are actually in a really, really good spot on that front.
Yeah, I agree. I think my confidence in the depth is a lot higher than it was going into last season. And some of that's improvements to the roster, and some of that's just seeing what those guys brought to the table. Obviously, Dean Wade is coming off a meniscus tear as well, so it's possible that he needs to be brought along slowly going into next year. But I believe there was reporting that he'll have pretty much a full offseason, so obviously rooting for him to continue to make an impact with the Cavs. And this also ties into a question Michael Francisco asked. He asked, do you guys see Lamar and Dean Wade as parts of the future, or do you think that they're placeholders until similar prospects come to fruition through the G League or other means? And I don't think that they're placeholders. I think that they're rotation contributors. And, you know, like, maybe if they develop, that gives you flexibility to either make a move somewhere else down the roster because you know that they can kind of step up from that 12th, 13th man on the roster to 9th or 10th. Maybe they become part of a trade. I mean, you certainly can't rule that out, but both of them kind of strike me as guys that have more value to the Cavs than just about any other team because you know that they've accepted their role and you know that they fit the culture. I mean, both of those guys have been great on and off the court by all accounts. So I don't see them as placeholders, but when we talk about kind of who's untouchable and who's part of the future for sure, there's really only three that I think you could write in marker right now as part of the future for the Cavs.
Yeah, they're part of the future insofar as I could absolutely see them on the team 4 years from now.
Yeah.
And I couldn't say that for some of our core rotation members, which is what I just talked about. So
look, if Lamar ends up being our Udonis Haslam, I'm here for it, Carter.
Sure. So, you know, I think I don't know if the framing of that question even works for me, because sure, they're placeholders in the sense that they're end of rotation guys, but clearly they're guys that the team is very comfortable with and they trust both on and off the court to, and you know, I, that's not nothing.
Yeah.
I would argue that past iterations of the Cavs really struggled to lock down these, those kind of spots and have people that they trusted in that, in those positions. And they have that now. So in that sense, I'm sure, I think they're part of the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. From the Discord, our buddy Toby asks, who's going to have more impact next season, Carter? Neto or Lopez?
Our boy, Toby. If I'm angsty. We love you, Toby. I think it is inherently Neto, just because of the fact that he has a tailor-made rotation spot both now, at least for now. You know, this is a team that has needed steady point guard play for 48 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I still kind of think, assuming Sexton's back for at least next year, that he gets the first crack at the backup point guard spot, just because it is such a minutes crunch, mm-hmm. frankly, right now. And he'll get some time there, but I think Neto is someone that JB's going to turn to. Whereas I think JB's going to have a harder time turning to Lopez because of the wealth of options they have in the front court on a night-to-night basis. Like, you, if you play Lopez, you're taking minutes directly away from Kevin, Lowry, and Evan, all three of whom have pretty much earned their minutes. Yeah. So, you know, I just think it's unlikely. That's what I would say, is unlikely that he is playing on a night-to-night basis. Now, with that said, let's say Rubio has some setback and he's back way later than we want.
Mm-hmm.
Or Jared Allen gets banged up and is out for a couple months. If both those things happen, well, then I'll cry. But if both those things happen, I would lean towards Lopez.
Yeah.
But I think based on the ideation of a healthy roster in the short term, I think it's Neto.
Yeah, I think Lopez provides good insurance. Like, if Jared does miss some time, I mean, knock on wood, I think he helps prevent the drop-off from being as dramatic as it was last year. And really, like, when you look at how competitive the Eastern Conference appears like it's going to be, it's going to come down to who navigates those injuries and those missteps along the way the best, right? Because it might be the difference between a 5 seed and an 8 seed might be 3 games, 3-4 games going into this year when you look at just how tight these rosters all look. And I think Lopez provides you insurance, but on a night-to-night basis, I expect Neto to be more of a part of the rotation. I think there's a real value to what he can bring to the table. And Lopez, it's going to be more matchup dependent. And I still expect in the majority of matchups, it's probably going to be 48 minutes of Jarrett or Evan at the 5. And they'll stagger them like they did last year, right? And
you kind of have to. It's not even just about reps. Like, you can't get Evan the minutes he needs and Lowry and Kevin the minutes they need if you don't do that.
Yeah, and especially if Lowry needs more minutes at the 4 because you have more options on the perimeter. Like, you need to make that adjustment from a coaching standpoint to make sure that it's Evan and Jarrett getting the majority of the minutes at the 5. So for that reason, I'm going to say Neto. I do think it's an interesting question, though, and I don't think we should overlook the impact and the security that you get from having Lopez as a kind of break glass in case of emergency option.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled with them both.
Mm-hmm. David asks, who is going to be the starting shooting guard to start next season? Now,
sure,
that
sure seems like it's Karis.
I'm going to say Karis as well, because you look even at Darius Garland tearing his meniscus in college. He talked about it. He said it wasn't until the second half of the season until he started feeling like himself again physically. And obviously there's differences between that and Sexton's situation. Garland was essentially coming from high school because he didn't get a full college year and coming off of that injury, whereas Sexton already had, I mean, let's be honest, he's got a grown man body already. He's been through a lot of this stuff, and the videos all look great. So I'm going to pencil in Karis right now, although I would say at this time last offseason, we were penciling Lowry in as the backup power forward. And, you know, like, these things are fluid. It's going to come down to who earns that opportunity. I think in a vacuum, I actually think Sexton makes more sense alongside Garland because I think he's the better off-ball player, and you want that playmaking juice that Karras can provide with the second unit. But I also do see the advantages of, especially if Mobley takes a step forward with his outside shot and can provide a little bit more spacing, I definitely see the value of Garland with a 6'6 wing and 3'7 footers. Like, we saw a version of that play really well against Atlanta in a ridiculously small sample size. And I get the appeal of that, especially if you're trying to get Sexton a lot of reps to get comfortable and allow him to kind of get an opportunity to run the show a little bit more in the second unit as he regains his footing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Karras right now. But that, to your point, I think JB actually gets to hold the lineup card a little bit more. This, I think, Billy Beane taking Art Howe's, you know, forcing Art Howe's hand. So I think that JB ultimately gets to kind of make the call here. Yeah. And JB has tended to just do what he thinks is right and, like, figure it out. And that one of his strengths as a communicator is that he can get people to buy into their roles.
Yeah.
You know, we saw it with Kevin Love last year. So I think ultimately Karras has pole position because of the front office's investment in him on the trade market to get a, because I think the team wants to see that lineup more. I mean, Fedor's talked about it 46 times at this point about how much they wanted to see that lineup that only played like 20 minutes together.
Yep.
With that said, I think if Colin is kicking everyone's butt in training camp, or Ochai is kicking everyone's butt in training camp, or even Okoro is kicking everyone's butt in training camp, I think it will be one in training camp, even if there isn't, you know, someone with pole position to start that race.
Yeah,
it is still a race. It's not, I don't think it's a done deal.
Yeah, and I've talked about my bias before in this situation when it comes to Sexton. Like, I don't think about the injury as much, right? Like, I think, oh yeah, he's still that 24-4 guy. And even if those numbers aren't there, that doesn't mean, like, the box score stats you put up doesn't necessarily define your impact. But I think that kind of a player is still there. And I think Sexton, at his best prior to the injury, was a better player than LeVert in a vacuum. But he's always been someone that does what's best for the team. And especially if it's, hey, we're trying to get you right, we're trying to get you comfortable, I definitely can see a scenario where Karras ends up starting at the shooting guard position. This does tie into a kind of an interesting topic and something that I'm really interested to get your thoughts in, Carter. Bron Jetty asked, how do you feel about Okoro? We know that this is a giant season for him. Do you bet on a big leap or a more minimal progression from him?
I think so.
I guess we should list him in the mix for shooting guard, right? Like, yeah, he did start a lot of games last season.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I did it at last because I don't think he's going to win the job. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know, man. I think it is really the big question around Okoro is, can he make a meaningful step forward on the offensive side of the ball, whether it's as an on-ball attacker, someone who can attack a closeout, or, you know, run a secondary pick and roll, or as a corner three-point shooter? We saw the progression, but on very, very low volume.
Yep.
And the volume needs to be there. And, you know, when you know, it's time to hit him, he's got to make them.
Yep.
He's got to be someone that teams feel like they have to close out on. I think short of that, he still has an opportunity to play a role. I mean, you look at a starting lineup with Karras in it. Who are you throwing on Trae Young on that one? It's going to be a tough, that's uphill sledding defensively. He remains by a mile the best perimeter defender on the team, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yep.
I think that
that's pretty quantifiable at this point.
Yeah, I think that Ochai is going to be more solid and serviceable than lockdown on that end.
Yep.
So if you think you're getting Okoro there with a jumper, you're probably not. I also think his finishing is underrated. I think, you know, again, I think Ochai and Okoro are going to get a lot of comparisons because of their physical profiles.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it myself quite a bit just because I'm trying to evaluate who's going to earn minutes and where. And something I was thinking about with Okoro watching Summer League is he finishes better than Ochai right now.
Yeah. He finishes finished really well at the rim in college, and last season he made a massive leap. Like, we talk about how the percentages went up from the outside, albeit on a small sample size. The finishing on the inside, I really, really went up. And I think it was largely to do with an improved handle. It's still not at the point where he's really generating a lot of offense, but he was more in control as he was approaching the rim. And that allowed him to really kind of showcase the touch that he has with either hand at the basket.
Yeah, I think that he's a more explosive vertical athlete than Ochai is right now with the ball in his hands.
Okay.
Like, there were a few times where in Summer League where Ochai, you know, got a hard closeout, got past his man, got in the air and was like, uh-oh, I don't really actually have a way to generate an angle here. Mm-hmm. I think Ochai is great on the baseline, you know, as a cutter.
Yeah.
But I also think that was against college competition. I want to see him dunk on some folks first. Like Okoro, we've seen him dunk through some folks.
Yeah.
So I think that Okoro is closer than people probably think, including myself. But I mean, when you have a fatal flaw, it's a fatal flaw for a reason. And right now, mm-hmm. he can't shoot at a level that warrants the respect of the defense. And respect matters a lot more than whether it goes in.
Yeah, yeah. I think Lowry's a great example of that, right? Like, he didn't shoot a tremendous percentage from three, although kind of second half of the season was very, very good. But even when it wasn't going down, he had the respect of the defense, and there was real gravity when he was out there on the court. I'm starting to feel a little more bullish about a leap from Okoro because year three is typically when you see these guys kind of take that big step forward. And I think it's important to note as well that he's damn near the youngest player on the team. I think Mobley's got him beat by like 4 months or something like that, but he's still very, very young. But the fact that he's getting a real offseason for the first time in his career, and, you know, there's more context. Like, going into last year, and I think this is something that gets overlooked a lot, we were trying to find something that worked, right? Like, let's throw some things at the wall and find what sticks. And Lowry at the three was an example of that. Lowry now has a full offseason of preparing to play at the small forward position as well as power forward. There's no way his offseason regimen last year had anything to do with that, but now he has a more of an understanding of what his role is. And I think the same thing is true for Okoro. He can see, looking back at the film, okay, now that we actually have a defined structure, what opportunities was I leaving on the table? And I think having that to work off of allows you to work on your game in more specific ways to help fill a need. And I think from an opportunity standpoint, an Isaac Okoro offensive leap makes just about as big of a difference as possible with this team. Because if you have multiple wings that can contribute on both ends of the floor in Agbaji and Okoro, projecting that Agbaji is what we think he's going to be, that really opens up a lot of possibilities. I'm not talking about them starting together necessarily. I don't think Isaac's going to be in that mix. But throughout the course of the game, having like two guys that aren't taking anything off of the table, especially with how good of an interior defense you're going to have with Mobley and Allen, I think there's a lot of potential there. So I'm not writing Okoro off. I don't know if it's going to be a giant leap or anything like that, but I do think that we're going to see an offensive leap from him because by all accounts, he is a hard worker. Now, I guess the other side of this coin and a question that we received in the Discord from Vinman was how long of a leash do we see Okoro getting? And that's a tough question because it really depends on how much progress he makes, how ready Agbaji is, how good Sexton looks, how good LeVert looks, right? Like, there are so many variables when it comes to talking about minutes in this rotation that it's really, really hard to even make an educated guess.
I think it has a lot more to do with the guys around him than him. So I, again, like, not to continue to reject the premise of the questions we're getting, but I kind God, of...
You are so ungrateful.
I know. I kind of want to push back on the framing, which is like, I think that it's just going to be a matter of if Ochai pops, Okoro is not going to get that many minutes unless he's great. If Colin doesn't look quite right yet and Karis is having a hard time playing defense in the team concept, which he had last year, by the way, then he'll probably get more minutes. But I don't really think it's a vibe. I think that viewpoint like implies that like JB is going to like say, well, he better do good or he's not going to play today. It's like, well, it's going to depend on how all the other guys in his spot are doing.
I think with Okoro and a lot of these guys, it's still going to be process over results. Like, are you trying to do the things that we are getting you to do? Because we feel like we have something here and we need guys that are going to fit into this system. So I think even if he came into next year and he's taking more threes, but they're not necessarily going in at a high rate, but he's taking the right kinds of shots and making the right kinds of decisions, I think he's going to continue to get an opportunity because he is already so good defensively at such a young age. And like I said, if you have 2 6-6 wings in a Okoro and Agbaji that can contribute on both ends of the floor, it really does open up a lot of possibilities. And I think you can get away with that, despite the fact neither of them are kind of like the 6'9", 6'10", Jason Tatum type wings because of what you have on the interior.
Absolutely.
Luke Christopherson. That's a...
Christopherson.
Christopherson. Thank you, Carter. I you know, reading. It's difficult.
Yeah, well, it's a weird last name. I just know the actor, Chris Christopherson.
Judge last names here just because it's not something I'm used to pronouncing. It's me. I suck here.
You need to dial it back a couple ticks here with this aggression.
Hey, you're the one rejecting the listeners' questions here, Carter. Let's see if you reject this one. Over under 1.5 playoff game wins next season.
I'm going to say under.
You coward.
I've said it that a few times privately that I think it is more likely than probably we want to acknowledge that the team doesn't make the playoffs. The East is really, 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 really good. There is, the play-in is intensely, stop it. Cause you don't act surprised. We've already talked about this. I don't appreciate this theater out of you. I think that, you know, I think 1 through 6 in the East is really, really competitive. I think the Cavs could go as high as, you know, 3 or 4 if they can get if everything's breaks right. But the second you land at 7 or 8, your margin for error collapses because of the play-in format.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what kinds of teams they run into at the right or wrong time, I just think it's very possible. I think it's probably, if you asked me to handicap it, I would probably say like 60-40 make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be really tough. So if you're not even going to make, if you don't even make the playoffs, you're certainly not winning 1.5 games.
Yeah.
So I feel okay with that, but also I wouldn't, if it were a line in Vegas, I would stay away. Cause I think if they make a series, the chance of them stealing 2 games off of just about anyone is pretty good.
Yeah. And I mean, the play-in's always scary. Like you lose that first play-in game and all of a sudden you're going up against Donovan Mitchell's New York Knicks and he can get hot in a 1-game scenario. So you never know, Carter, but I'm saying it. Cavs Heat 4-5 matchup. It's going 7. Bookmark it, write it down. Never hold me accountable for anything I say, but that's my prediction at the end of July here.
I don't hate it. And it's a good thought exercise, but I think it would be a stay away if you asked me to actually bet it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, the interesting dynamic in all this is if the Cavs are very good and the players that we're kind of counting on to take a leap forward through internal growth, if that occurs, you might get aggressive and change up how this team looks a little bit at the trade deadline because that timeline accelerates, right? Like it's something that's very, very fluid. And those are really, really tough decisions that Kobe's going to have to make on the fly. So I think, once again, when we talk about maintaining flexibility, maintaining your options, and it's really beneficial to do that because you don't know what opportunities are going to come up. Naaman asks, speaking of you never know what opportunities are going to come up, do you think there's a chance we trade Kevin Love this season now that his deal is expiring?
I'd be real surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the reason that you would want to trade him has kind of expired. Like, you know, I think the Cavs probably, when they signed Lauri Markkanen to this deal, they were probably thinking, well, you know, we can probably, you know, we're a rebuilding team. We can take a big expiring Love, take on some longer term contracts back and, you know, maybe get a couple assets for our trouble. And now you won't do that because they're right up near the tax and they're trying to win games. So, like, I think that that's kind of the number one driver short of a big consolidation trade where you need a big number to go big game hunting. And I also don't think any big game hunting is going to happen anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So an in-season Kevin Love trade, I just think their incentive well for them to do that has dried up. And that's not even to touch the fact that Darius clearly loves him.
Mm-hmm.
He has become, you know, I think surprisingly, most people would say, become a real leader for this team. Plus, there's championship cachet. I know that doesn't mean everything, but it means something. He won us a title.
Right.
So I think all of that combined makes it I would be real surprised. If you were to ask me to power rank my top five Cavs that might be traded this offseason, I do not think he would be, or this during the season, I do not think he would make my top five.
Carter, you are on the money. I don't even feel the need to add anything to that. You were
I nailed it.
Hot you damn. Nailed it. You were coming in crystal clear, and you were coming in crystal clear because of our friends at Zoom. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from our friends at Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. The in-podcast reads are back, Carter.
It feels good. You know, there's something about the top, you know, the top of the pod read is nice, but there's nothing like, and you caught me off guard with that one. Normally I see it a mile away and I'm so out of practice that it felt good. It felt good with the out of left field ad read. So well done. And shout out to Zoom, who also have been a loyal supporter of the Chase Down podcast.
Absolutely. Ben Farrell asks, speaking of loyal supporters of the podcast, I assume he's one. What's the biggest move you see the Cavs making this offseason? Whether it's a small deal like trading Jetty or Windler or a massive consolidation trade for a star, what do you think is the biggest logical and most realistic move the Cavs have left? I mean, again, this is tricky because we don't have any sources here. I don't think there's going to be a big move from here on out because a lot of the pieces that you might consider moving in a deal like that, I just don't think that they have maximum value right now. Or I think so many guys, whether it's LeVert, Okoro, like Sexton, all these players, we've already talked about how it's a prove it year for a lot of those guys. And for one reason or another, understandable context, it didn't necessarily none of those guys blew up with the Cavs last year and solidified themselves along with the core. And for that reason, I just feel like it's really hard to foresee a consolidation trade. Now, if an opportunity came along, I think the Cavs are pretty thorough and they will surprise us with a deal every now and then. Like, who knows? There's reporting out there that the Knicks are willing to part with RJ Barrett, but the Jazz prefer picks. If there's an opportunity to get there in there as a third team and add someone like an RJ Barrett, I don't think that's going to happen. I think RJ Barrett's going to be with the Knicks. And if I'm the Knicks and I have the chance to add Donovan Mitchell without giving up him, I am taking them up on that offer because you need to have as many stars as possible. But you never know what opportunity is going to come along. But I think for the most part, the roster we have right now is the roster that the Cavs are going to go into the season with. And you know, maybe it is a type of deal, whether it's part of a Mitchell trade as a third team, where maybe we give up two non-guaranteed or expiring contracts and take someone like a Rudy Gay, who has an extra year left on his deal that fills a need at the forward spot, clears up some salary for the Cavs this season, and opens up a roster spot for Colin Sexton. I could see something like that occurring.
I think that is fair. Man, you know, I think that it's more likely they make a surprise deal than a splashy deal, mm-hmm. you know, like where they get in on a Donovan Mitchell trade as a third team and you go, oh, I didn't expect that. This player wasn't on our radar and he just got brought back as part of a weird, you know, third three teamer. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest move they can make is sign Colin Sexton to a long-term deal. I think we've both kind of planted our flag on the pro Sexton hill. And yeah. I think that's probably the biggest the biggest move we could expect moving forward, but there's a lot of things that are that have to happen first, you know. So that we know this. They're at 15 players right now. Something's got to happen if they want Colin back. So it's going to be very, very interesting. It's kind of fun knowing they're not done, even though I kind of want them to be done. I want it to get over, but also we're, you know, there's still intrigue to be had.
There's months left. There is actually, we're recording this July 26th. I believe training camp is September 26th. We are 2 months away from camp. There is a lot of time. And when it comes to contract negotiations, trade negotiations, like all of that stuff takes time, right? Like you want to make sure that whether you are a player trying to maximize your value in contract negotiation, whether you're a team trying to maximize the assets you have, like it's really interesting. Like even when you look at Boston, like we talked about how the DeJounte Murray trade took Atlanta basically outside of the Kevin Durant market. You look at Boston, they gave up 2 first-round picks for Derek White. And as a result of that, they only have one that they're eligible to trade because of the years that they had given up. Like it's really hard for them to trade multiple picks without doing some protections and stuff like that, because you would be left with multiple years in a row where you wouldn't have a first round pick. So it's tricky, man. Like you think even someone like Derek White, who we really like going into the trade deadline, like you go in for him, you think it's a reasonable price, but it can hurt your flexibility down the road. So these things are very, very, very complicated.
Anton, yes, they are.
Anton asks, Carter, where do you rank the Cavs in the Eastern Conference? Obviously, you have them in the play-in. Are they a playoff team, play-in team? If they were to make the playoffs, who do you think they could beat in a playoff series?
I think the better exercise here is to break it into tiers, and that will help us define what tier we feel the Cavs are in, because obviously rankings are they're too noisy. I think the top tier of the East for now is Boston, Milwaukee alone.
I
think the second tier is Philly, Miami, and Brooklyn, assuming that everyone's back, of course. I think the third tier is probably right where the Cavs are, which is Toronto, Chicago, Atlanta, Cleveland, and then the Knicks once they trade for Donovan Mitchell.
Okay.
So that is, you know, I listed, I think, 2 teams in my first tier, 3 teams in my second tier. That takes us to 5, which means that, you know, the 5-6 teams in tier 3 are fighting for 3 remaining playoff spots, as far as I'm concerned. And obviously any one of those top tiers, they can have a bad injury. They can just not have the right feng shui for whatever reason. And it doesn't work. And they're worse than I think they should be. But you know, if you look at it there, I think the Cavs are competing for a playoff spot, but probably just as likely to be a play-in team as a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with my tier list?
I kind of do. I would have all 4 of those top teams in the East in the first tier, and like Miami, I kind of put 4th right now because I think Kyle Lowry is going to be a year older and worse. I think Jimmy Butler is probably going to be a year older than worse, but they might have a full season of Bam, and Bam's still capable of taking a step forward. Tyler Hero might take a step forward as well. And Miami's just trying to get well paid. Coached. What's that?
Trying to get paid.
Yeah.
That matters.
Like, Miami's just so well coached. Like I would keep them up there in that tier, but I think Philadelphia is closer to the top 2 than you're giving them credit for. I think they've really improved their roster, and I went from not a believer in them last season to someone that actually believes in them.
Who am I talking to?
You are talking to an objective co-host right now, Carter. I'm willing to put my hate aside and
They picked up DeAnthony Melton, and now they're title contenders.
Yeah,
sounds good.
PJ Tucker, man. PJ Tucker, he signed a 4-year deal. He's going to be great forever.
He's going to be playing until he's 46. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm honestly legitimately floored by this about face from you. Even if you are a fan of Embiid, and I don't know, maybe think Harden's going to try to get in good shape for once.
Yeah. Hey, he took less money. He's completely changed my perception of him. I didn't think he was that guy.
You have truly flustered me, and I don't think I'm going to listen to the rest of your answer because I'm caught on this.
Got to keep him guessing, Carter. That's what this is really about. But I agree. And after those 4, Yeah, I think the Cavs are either in tier two or tier three, depending on how you define it. I would keep those four in the tier of their own, partly because it sounds better to have the Cavs in tier two. But I think they have a legitimate shot to be the best team in tier two, along with Toronto, Atlanta, and all the other teams I'm forgetting that are in the mix. But I definitely think that the Cavs are right there. And I think with a strong season, especially when you look at kind of the age of some of these teams ahead of them and the fact that you might see some load management in that, you could absolutely get home court. Although if you don't, you have to beat one of those four teams. And I think that's a tall order. I would give the best chance against Miami. Again, Cavs, Miami, 4-5 matchup, going seven. Calling it now.
You know, I'd be thrilled. So, that, sure.
It'd be a lot of
co-sign.
Fun.
Co-sign.
I would co-sign. Love to I, find
that,
out
that
what...
One, that one would be hard on my heart, because you know I hate Miami.
That's true. But it would be a really, really great learning experience. I think the priority should be to avoid the play-in. And I if I had to guess right now, I think the Cavs are going to avoid the play-in tournament, which means at a minimum, fifth or sixth seed next season. I think that's a fair enough prediction.
I think it's certainly a fair enough expectation internally in the locker room. Even if they don't get there, I think it's a reasonable goal to set.
Yep. Yep. I agree. And you know what? Big thanks to all of our listeners for sending in your questions. Again, as Carter said at the top of this podcast, this is easy for us to from a show planning perspective, but it's a lot of fun to kind of understand what you guys have going on your minds, what questions you want to have answered. Of course, if you have any follow-ups to any of the takes that we've dropped on the podcast, feel free to either at the Chase Down Pod account, email us at chasedownpod@gmail.com, or discuss it in our Discord, which you definitely should be joining. It's a lot of fun, a lot of debates going on throughout the offseason. But for all of those listening on YouTube, you can support us by liking, subscribing, click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of that Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cats.